Obama, an Oral History, 2009 to 2017, is the first ever comprehensive oral history of President Obama's White House, a chronology of the politics and governing behind a landmark American presidency. For this candid oral history of a near decade in Washington, Brian Abrams obtained access to Obama World, interviewing aides and advisors in the administration and on the campaigns, as well as several elected members of Congress, both Democrat and Republican. Again, the name of the book is Obama, an Oral History, 2009 to 2017. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Brian Abrams to the roundtable this morning. Brian, thank you very much for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Give us a sense of what you wanted to accomplish in this oral history.
Yeah, sure. Well, I think first it's probably best if I just explain to your listeners what an oral history is, just for those not completely familiar with the format. Essentially, unlike, you know, your typical, you know, political book that is written in prose form, paragraph after paragraph, in this, I spent the last 2 years interviewing more than 100 people who either worked at the Obama White House or were Republicans and Democrats in Congress, cabinet secretaries, campaign strategists, you name it, and sort of sliced and diced all those interviews and into these bite-sized quotes that essentially tells the story of, you know, D.C. politics from the last era. I guess I'd say that my goal was to create something that, like, a true political nerd could just sort of get lost in. You know, those are the books I find the most exciting.
In rounding everybody up and talking about whether it be Democratic, Republican politicians, speechwriters, attorneys, everybody that you talked about, there seems to be, and maybe I'm just reading into it, but there seems to be a respect for the guy.
Well, I mean, it depends on who you ask, right? I mean, half the country still hates Obama. The other half, you know, sort of blindingly loves him. I think that, how best to answer that for you? I do kind of go back to what I said initially. I think about trying to create, like, a nerdy book. It's accessible, don't get me wrong. It's just that I kind of always had in my head not to think about this book as, say, you know, something written by an advocate, you know,
or
like, on the other hand, something written by someone who just wants to, you know, throw darts at the man all day long. I just wanted to create something that I think anyone that remembers all of the controversies and crises from the last 10 years can go back and see how people that were involved in them can reflect on it. Or, you know what, for that matter, I mean, since the political space has sort of consumed us all now in the Trump era, it's probably a pretty strong roadmap for anyone who wants to play catch-up.
So in doing this particular oral histories, and you have done many others, what were the challenges, the inherent challenges in this project?
Well, they're all challenging in their own way. For this one, probably the fact that, A, Obama World is so vast. I mean, this isn't the same thing as doing an oral history on a TV show where everyone worked in the same studio. You know, we're talking about a heavily populated U.S. government, multiple federal agencies, multiple campaigns. I mean, everyone's involved in it, and it affects everyone across America, right? But I would say more to that, because my background in journalism has historically been more pop culture related, for me to kind of enter the political sphere was new. And so that required me, I had to play a little catch up into kind of seeing how the game was played in that respect.
Is there a sense, I would think, in something like this that it drives you crazy of you got to what you could get to, but then there's still things that you couldn't get to?
Oh, I see. Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, because so many things happened in the 8 years of his presidency, not to mention all the campaigns, you know, from, say, 2007, 2008, and for that matter, the Romney campaign and the McCain campaign, you're not going to get everything, right? And I also knew that I wanted the book to be around 500 pages, that may sound like a lot. It actually reads really fast, but I did want it to be heavy enough that it was, you know, respectable for the amount of pages that an entire presidency merits, you know, when writing about it. On the other hand, I didn't want to turn it into some giant reference book either. So it was deliberate that I had to omit some stuff. And along the way, I used my best judgment to decide which stories to focus on more, which ones to focus on less, and which ones to leave out altogether.
I'm wondering how much, given you do this project or you start this project after he leaves office, is it tinged at all in the way people are talking in some either positive or negative comparison to our current president?
Right. I'm sure that there's plenty of passages in this book that just screams at people about the way government had previously operated before being hostily taken over by an authoritarian regime. But the truth is, I started this project spring 2016, and had Clinton won in November, for the most part, I would have approached the structure of the book in the same way, meaning that I had a sense of the timeline of things going into this that I wanted to focus on. As I mentioned before, some of that changes. You figure out things that maybe require more attention. But, you know, the only difference I would say in the book is that the ending is much sadder.
When it comes to the time that you get with the participants of the people that you get to talk to, I assume that varied, but what was your, you could get a lot in a short period of time, I'm assuming.
I mean, it depends who you're talking to. Some people would give you an entire afternoon, some people a 15-minute phone call, and in the 15-minute phone call cases, you try to keep them on for as long as you can anyway, but others maybe require a little more time to open up, to warm up, either because they're just naturally introverted or they don't know you yet. So it's really case by case. And what was funny about that, I found, was that sometimes when kind of retelling these stories from over the last 8 years, the best sort of drivers of the stories weren't necessarily the people that were sitting at the table at, say, that particular meeting, but were maybe the guy standing up against the wall holding the clipboard or passing around the papers, because it's just arbitrary how some people are more fit to remember and reflect than others. It's always surprising.
When you think about what an oral history gives us, and it's different from a traditional history of an administration of a president, what are the advantages, do you think, of having these voices and being able to dip in, dip out, and look and see what a particular person says on a particular subject and have that in your mind?
Yeah. Well, I would say there's some pros and cons. On the one hand, as far as just a read goes, having a book that's structured in sort of blocks of quotes but still keeps the ball bouncing and tells a large story, it's really easily digestible, and you find yourself like flipping through 200 pages way faster than you ever thought you would in like one sitting. I've been told that a lot by readers, so that's nice. The other part is a little complicated because, as I mentioned before, when you have most, say, these long narratives on Washington written, and they're written in prose form, sort of paragraph by paragraph, a lot of the sources go on background. Now, when the author finds out their information and they report it, I mean, I'm assuming it's true, it, you know, can be more revealing than what someone who is willing to go on the record might say. I don't know that for sure, but that was a huge challenge for me, admittedly, was when this is a book that's structured in a way where every single source is on the record no matter what, how do you make them speak to you in an unguarded fashion, and how do you make them tell you the real deal? And some would, and some wouldn't, but you can tell. And I think the ones that try to be too protective come off that way very easily. And it actually adds like a really interesting kind of dynamic in the book. It's almost like you see people fighting in real time.
Who didn't you get that you wanted?
That's a good question. First off, I would say that since this is my fourth oral history, I've kind of come to a zen place where I go into it telling myself, Brian, look, you know, some people you're going to get, some people you're not going to get. It's just going to happen. But the key is you got to make this book happen. You got to put it together. And so once you kind of accept that, then you reach a point where you don't get upset when people say no. You don't take no for an answer right away either. Now, that said, I can think of two guys that I would have loved to have heard from. One is Larry Summers, who ran the National Economic Council for Obama for the first two or three years. And he's kind of a controversial figure for a number of reasons, namely that he kind of led the charge in taking a more pragmatic approach to the handling of the banks during the recession and during the banking reform bill. The other person who I find fascinating and seems like a super nice guy is Greg Craig, who ran the White House counsel's office in the first year. And, you know, his big project, or at least the sort of high-profile project for him, was closing down Gitmo and transferring and releasing prisoners, which, as we all know, didn't happen. And that story is in the book, but I really wanted to hear from him, especially as to how and where he felt, you know, kind of really clogged up in trying to make that happen.
Brian Abrams is the author of the new book, Obama, An Oral History, 2009 to 2017. It is published by Little A. Brian Abrams, thank you very much for spending time with us. It's a great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you. Anytime.
Thank you. Again, the name of the book is Obama, An Oral History, 2009 to 2017. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.